Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Monica Ricks. Israel says it is urging civilians to get out of southern Gaza as it steps up attacks against Hamas following the collapse of a temporary ceasefire. Mark Regev's a top aide to Prime Minister Netanyahu.
We've designated specific safer areas for people to move to. The whole idea is to save lives. That's the point of requesting people to leave.
CBS's Linda Gradstein's in Jerusalem.
The Israeli army spokesman said the Hamas commander was in charge of plans to raid Israel on October 7th that sparked the current fighting. He also said the army is expanding the ground offensive to all areas of the Gaza Strip and said the army will reach wherever Hamas operates.
Meantime, some Palestinians say they have nowhere to go to escape this bombing. Nearly 2 million have been displaced since the war started. The U.S. is also optimistic that there could be another pause in fighting soon to free more hostages. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby was on Face the Nation this morning.
We don't believe it's insurmountable. In fact, even while the negotiations have stopped, we haven't stopped our efforts on the National Security Council and all the way up to the president, trying to work hour by hour to see if we can get this pause reinstated and get those hostages out.
Only 2 Americans have been released so far. Another major earthquake hit the southern coast of the Philippines, this time a magnitude 6.9. Experts say there's no risk of tsunami, but it is the same area a 7.6 magnitude tremor hit yesterday, killing 2 people. Alaska Airlines says it plans to buy Hawaiian Airlines. Here's CBS's Linda Kenyon.
The deal, worth $1.9 billion, would keep both airlines' brands from the nation's 49th and 50th states, with the combined airline based in Seattle and led by Alaska Airlines CEO. Honolulu would remain a key hub. While the deal has the approval of the boards of both companies, it still needs the okay from shareholders and from the federal government.
Investigators say they tracked down the man arrested for allegedly killing 3 homeless people in L.A. by using surveillance video to match his license plate to each murder scene. L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna.
Through a combination of interviews, videos, and other investigative techniques, they were able to identify a vehicle that they believed was used in this murder.
They still don't have a motive. Flu season is here, and the CDC says it expects cases to keep climbing through the end of the year. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
Flu has started later than it did last year. It's predominantly flu A. The vaccine does appear to cover it well, and the vaccination rates have been quite good this year. About 38% of adults and children have been vaccinated for flu.
And he says, surprisingly, COVID's still more prevalent. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger Hockey lives here.
Keep it going, baby.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. 23 tonight, under cloudy skies, northwest winds, around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy again tomorrow, 36. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut. You have your host, James J. I am joined by Seth Habhacker.
Thanks for joining us once again, everyone. We are celebrating our first year on the air of Seth. Of Director's Cut.
Seth faces director's cut. It's our new hybrid
show. It's all
show.
One show in my mind. It's all blended together at this point. That's what happens. But
that Seth faces director's cut. I like that.
So we're doing another kind of special show. We did a show already of some of our favorite musical moments, mm-hmm. but we also have done a ton of interviews, so that's what we're going to focus on this one.
We're going to take excerpts from some of the wonderful people that joined us and everything, and I've kind of been calling this a bit of a greatest hits, but it's not so much that, because if it was that, it would literally be 5 to 10 hours long.
It would be long.
Every guest we have had has had a great time. We've had a great time with, have had interesting things to say, and I don't genuinely believe we've had a bad episode. So we could pull from all those. What we're doing here, though, is taking some highlights and we're kind of highlighting some question and some answers and some of that. And we wanted to start off where you'd think we'd start off with the first episode. October 30th, 2022. We had our first episode, the SpongeBob musical. Didn't mean to cut you off there. But
that's all right.
I was so excited I saw the date. I just got excited that such a... Oh,
that's right.
Man, that was a while ago.
Well over a year. My goodness. It's hard to remember that. But we want to do a special shout out to them because they were our first episode and they graciously joined us. Amber and Nick and Theo all came in to talk about the show.
Amber... working behind the scenes with me to make that happen, and it being our first guest was a pretty big deal, and she couldn't have been a better teammate about that. We really do appreciate them joining us. Here they are.
First up, how are things going over at CWAC?
Things are amazing. So first and foremost, CWAC as a whole, this will be the first musical that we've put on since 2019, just prior to the pandemic. Mm. Yeah. We've done a couple of shows since then, mostly, what was the Shakespeare?
We've done Midsummer Night's Dream last year, mm-hmm. and we did mm-hmm. Tempest this
year.
Yeah.
And
outdoor theater and virtual stuff.
Yep, there's a couple of virtual things that we've done, but this is the first time that we've been back on stage since, so it's a great opportunity for us to bring live theater back again to the Century Theater.
You know, for a long time, they've been, you know, taking care of crowds up there, and the area has been really supportive of the arts. It's great to have it back. What was it like in that downtime, though, of not having shows and not being able to do these kind of things for all of you? And I'll start with you, Amber.
I lost who I was as a person.
You and me both. I'll give you my therapist number.
Thank you.
It's got to feel good to be back, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just having the energy, right? So there's so much emotion and energy and life that you create, and you get to build something basically from scratch. I mean, you're given lines, but you get this whole entire playground. And when you don't have that opportunity... I don't know. I just run around the basement a lot screaming.
Oh, she's selling herself short, right? So, like, creatives like Amber, like, that creativity always comes out in some fashion. And she's such a self-starter. Like, she basically, like, taught herself how to knit, like, during that time. Uh-huh. And she's just, like, churning out hats and scarves like you wouldn't believe. And, like, even in just in the last, like... week, she's taught herself how to crochet, too, and, like, been doing a bunch of that stuff.
So Patrick... will be wearing an outfit, hopefully, right? It's not that kind of show.
Yeah.
I learned how to crochet and basically, made half of that outfit.
Yeah, I can tell you're dying to get back on stage, but it's cool you made good use of the time.
Yeah.
And it is a great note there, Nick, about how creative people are. It's not as if it's a switch for us. It just is always on. There's no turning it off. Ask Robin Williams about that. You know, it's an interesting story with him because for him, it was part of his personality, but he kind of like took a step back when he was around his kids and family, where that was his downtime. We've had enough of a downtime. We're happy to be back, happy to get on stage. Nick, how has it been for you waiting to get back out there?
Well, I was actually lucky enough to be able to do a show in Wausau.
I thought so. Okay.
So that was nice. And I did a show in Rapids last year.
Yes.
So I've been on the lucky side. I haven't had as long as a off period as you did.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to feel good to get back with this company.
Oh, I love it. So, I mean, CWACD is one of the first ones that I've worked with out of college and really found a home and a community with that, and it's been years since I've been on that stage, and it's a beautiful stage, so it's it's a homecoming for me.
Yeah, I'm jealous, and I'll warn you guys, and as well as the community out there, I will be on that stage at some point, even if I've got to, like,
been waiting.
The third tree on the left or something. Yeah. I don't care. I just, it's a beautiful stage, and there's something about it as an actor when you see something like that. I've talked to my dad about this as an athlete. That there were times where he would look at a rink or a boxing ring and like, I got to be in there. I don't care who I fight. I don't care who I play. I just got to feel it. I got to be out on that ice. I feel the same way about stages. And this one at CWAC is so great. The acoustics, everything about it. Every show I've ever seen there, I've not only heard, but I've really enjoyed.
Not to make you jealous, James, I have been on that stage.
Oh,
the first year we lived here in 2019, I was in the radio version of yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
Yes.
So I was able to do that. So I'm not rubbing it in your face or anything.
No, definitely not.
At all.
Oh, you know, no, that's, definitely.
That's not at all.
No, no.
So I'm going to be doing the show by myself from now on. That's awesome. I didn't know that. That's really cool. Oh, that is really cool, man. Oh, we got to talk about that. Theo, how good is it for you to be back out there and to be able to do this? And what is your background with acting? I don't know you as well, so it's good to meet you, man.
I'm super excited to be back. It's my first show since high school. I'm a senior in college. So, yeah, I've been thankful for the whole process. I've been loving it all, whether it was just learning the music or blocking choreography. I'm just happy to be here. So yeah, that's been really fun. I started acting in middle school, like seventh grade was my first show that I got into, and then ever since then I've been getting involved with community theater too, and so this is my first show with CWAC. But yes, that's a little bit about me and what I've been doing.
What a great time that gang was having on talking with them. Next up, we have a wonderful guest that has joined us a number of times and is sort of similar to some other guests, kind of become the fifth Beatle of this great show, Director's Cut. And it is my oldest daughter, Bria Hoyt. As I got to get used to saying now, since their wedding and their last name change.
That's right, of course, because she had a different name when we recorded
the show. That's right. I didn't even think about that.
We haven't had her on since then.
Right.
So, we're gonna delve into something that Bria and James are kind of doing together. We did a little one of the episodes. We talked about their podcast, What the Muppet.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And Bria had some really good things to add to this and kind of the behind the scenes of, and we'll play it for you right now.
So, What the Muppet is two dorks, might I say myself, are dissecting and it's pretty dorky. So, we have, I believe it's four hats in front of us during the whole thing, and one hat is full of Muppet facts and Muppet quotes, and then the other hat has 37 Muppet characters and five Muppet movies on slips of paper. And the other hat is full of prompts of this Muppet blank. And then the other hat is a would you blank prompt. Hmm. So the whole episode depends on what Muppet or Muppet movie we pull out. So a lot of the show is improvised. We don't know what's going to happen, which is a lot of the fun in it. So we pick out a fact or quote first that kind of starts off the show. And we talk about that and dissect it. And then typically, since there's more Muppets in there, we usually get a Muppet, and we talk about that Muppet, any funny moments we have with it, how we feel, describing the Muppet, and then we put them in these really wild scenarios.
Bria, how long did it, when it came to coming up with this idea, it sounded like early on in the process that you had the beginnings of this. How long did it take for you to form and get to where we are now with the show?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I was doing the dishes when I came up with the idea, because you and I had been bouncing around the idea of collaborating on something. And originally, for a while, we were working on a stage play, and that was really fun. And I'd like to get back to that someday.
Definitely.
But I don't know why, but just the mutual love that we have for Muppets like popped into my head. I was like, oh, wow, like, what if we did this? And honestly, I don't know how I got on that Muppet Avenue, but I'm glad that I did.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I think that it took, like, maybe like, a week to get everything, like, all of the slips, like, organized and the research and looking into our, like, podcast cover art and all of that good stuff. And we already had the equipment, which is just like a microphone and a laptop, really. But I think it came together like pretty quickly.
Yeah. And again, one of those things that I want to tell people, I think that you take in this podcast, you're watching the video, you're listening to it, and it's good production, and it sounds like there's a lot of that went into it. And I don't want to make light of what you did, the time you did put into, but I think it's not as much as some people might expect, and hopefully encouraging people to jump into this genre and get into the podcasting world. Don't talk Muppets. We've got that covered. But you can talk about anything else. You can. I'm kidding. But it's fun.
Really quick, as someone who has listened to the podcast, I have to say that the structure of the show is very different, I'm guessing, than just about every other Muppet podcast out there.
Yeah.
So I think you're good in terms of, is it going to be the same? You know, worrying about if it's, is this too much? Is there too many podcasts out there? I say probably not. I'm guessing there's not a lot that do the structure that you guys do.
It's a strong point.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Seth.
And when it comes to that part of it, just piggybacking off of what Seth is talking about there, I know how much you love being creative and you love leaning on that creative part of your brain, but you also you don't want to do something that everybody else is doing. You wanted to put a different spin on this. Is that where the hats and putting these Muppets in different situations? When you first presented the idea to me, I thought, oh, we're going to sit back and talk about a particular Muppet for a half an hour. And I thought that in alone was going to be a fun show. When you presented all of this, this is a carnival ride. This is going to be up and down and all over the place. Like, it was such a magnificent idea, I thought. Was it the intent to be different or to give people something different, or it just happened that way?
I think it just happened that way, to be honest. I know that's not like the fun answer, but it's just kind of how it popped into my head.
That is awesome. I think that's a perfect answer. Mm-hmm. I like that answer. I'm curious, too, about the time that it takes editing these. Your co-host is not easy to work with. Seth knows this better than most. The only person that might know it better than Seth is you. I'm just realizing right now that the two people that have to deal with me production-wise, you guys got good Christmas gifts coming, I'll tell you that. In all seriousness, Bria, how long does it take to put one of these episodes together?
Another great question. So I usually set a day aside during the week to do it. I think the video, since we have a video version on YouTube and then audio wherever you get your podcast, the audio version doesn't take as long because with the video version, there's a lot of like, not special effects, but sometimes I have something on the screen, or I always have the slip of paper that we pull out at the top, and there's, you know, video cuts and everything like that. So I'd say I usually try to set a day aside. It doesn't take me the entire day, but like a work hours day, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Bria Krieger, local artist and podcaster. And Bria, I wanted to, two things I wanted to do here. One, I wanted to ask, reference the great cover artist that we had, the artist that made our design for the logo for What the Muppet. Wanted to make sure to give them a shout out.
Yes, absolutely. Aubin Sprecher, he is an awesome local artist, and he also does very funny YouTube shorts at Death by Squirrel Productions on YouTube, so be sure to check that out.
I want to give him a special a shout-out because you guys, he turned you into Muppets.
He really did.
For the logo, and he did a fabulous job with that. It
really
looks
good
so good. Yeah.
Really good artist.
I was so excited to see that.
That was great.
I just focus on Bria's. I just look at hers. I'd love it. If Bria, if you were turned into a Muppet, that is exactly what you would look like.
It's very true.
Yeah. It's so well done. It's just me missing the fun sweater. That's all it's missing is a fun sweater or shirt or something like that. So one of the other things I wanted to mention, too, and talk about that I find interesting about this process, and I don't know if others look at this as a big deal, but to me, titles are important. And I don't mean important like in the traditional sense, but just in the sense of we may not realize how important it is, but it stays with us. I remember this because of a title. How many books, how many movies, how many songs have we listened to just because we catch a title? I know for me, if I see Moon in a title and I haven't heard the song before, I'm listening to that song. Like, it just is. I'm a sucker for it. When you're coming up with these titles, you do bounce off ideas with me a little bit, but they're they're pretty much in your wheelhouse, you coming up with them, and you do such a great job. And so does Seth. Seth, for those that don't know, Seth puts together our podcast for our shows and comes up with fantastic titles for all of these. So it's a question for both of you. I'll start with you, Bria. Coming up with these titles, is it fun? Is it frustrating? How long does it take? All of the above.
Oh, I like this question because it's one of my favorite parts of doing the podcast is like picking up the titles. And like you said, I do try to have like a couple of options and I'll send them to you because it's our podcast. But I guess while I'm editing it, one of us will say something like a little phrase and it'll kind of catch my attention. And like, oh, that was funny, or that was inspirational, or that would make the listener think, what in the world is this episode about? So I like writing down those moments, and I actually do the same thing with Hi Ho Pistachio. That's how I title the episodes as well.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
hey, you got this. Just breathe. Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. We hope you're enjoying yourselves out there. Thanks so much for joining us on this walk down memory lane that we are taking. Our next guest is one of our favorite people that we talk to in general, on air, off air, Joel Goodness.
Joel is a professional actor, and he's done some really amazing things. And we kind of wanted to get kind of a bird's eye, but like a close view of what it's like to actually be a working actor. Yeah. You know, you hear James talk about, you know, his experiences a lot of doing that sort of thing. But Joel has, of course, completely different experiences. And we really thought it was fascinating to get his take on all the stuff that he's done.
It's a continuation of something we're going to do, an actor series, where we continue to talk to actors at this kind of level and kind of give you a behind the scenes look of what that job is like.
And so from that interview from Joel, we're going to talk a little bit about his experience of being in a hit Broadway show, Crazy for You, which they just did up in Stevens Point, which is really cool. Joel was a part of that, which is really neat, kind of a revisitation for him. So here's him talking about his experiences of being on a hit show.
Well, I will tell you this. I was doing production of Camelot, and we were, it was the second production that I had done, and we had just finished a production in North Carolina, and we were doing another production with another director, rehearsing at the Minskoff Studios Midtown to do Camelot again, and everyone was saying, hey, there's this new show coming up, it's called Girl Crazy, or based on Girl Crazy, the movie, and they're looking for guys and girls, of course, and so Jack Allison, who's a sweet, sweet man, he said, okay, whoever, we had rehearsals that day, and he said, well, let's schedule rehearsals, you know, the next day, so that you all can go to this audition, and so a bunch of us did, and two of the guys got called back, and so a week later, we get a callback. And so we had to go back to callbacks. And there they have. So if you can imagine, when a new show comes out, everybody and their brother are looking to audition for this.
Well, sure.
Whether they're on Broadway now doing a show where they're doing Cats and they've been doing it for years, and or whatever the show was, they've been doing it. So now they have a whole new show, and this is they're looking for. This is with Susan Stroman. It was her first show. Mm. It was with the Gershwins. So it was their music. But it was to a brand new book. Ken Ludwig, who wrote the book, who we've done tons of comedies here. He was the writer. And so here we are at this audition, and there's about 300 to 500 guys that audition for this role. And so when you're thinking about the competition, there's double that.
Yes.
Because there's more girls than guys. So here you have these guys, and we're auditioning, and we're dancing through it. And then we, at the very end, we have to sing. And because I had to take off to go back to rehearsals or something, I had to leave early. So Susan asked me to go and vocalize with this pianist. So we went in the room, and I did all the vocals and everything. And then I had to take off, and I thought, oh, God. Mm. I couldn't stay for the rest of it, so I know I'm going to get axed because now I have no chance. Mm-hmm. Well, sure enough, the following week, we were opening in Beverly, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, doing Camelot at the Theater in the Round and Beverly, Massachusetts. And so I get a call, and they want us back for callbacks. Well, we were opening that night. And so I said, Jack, can we go? So two of us guys. So they said, okay, we'll let you go. And so you drove in to New York City, went to the callbacks, and here they have two sets of guys. They have 10 here, 10 here, and we're one of the two groups. And then they're moving us around, and they have us sing and dance again, and they're moving us around some more. And then they leave the two groups alone, and they say, thank you very much. And that was it. And here we are going, oh, my God, please stop with this. Yeah. You're killing me.
Just give me an answer.
Yeah, so we went back to Boston. We opened Camelot that night, I get a call that night after the show from Michael Ockrent, the director. He says, we'd like you to be part of the cast for Crazy for You. And I went, oh, my God. So it was emotional, and I cried, and then I hung up with him, and then I called my mom and dad, and I told them that. Yeah. So it was...
First thing you got to do. First thing.
Yep. Yeah. It was cool because they were very excited, and they knew that this was my dream, so it was kind of great. And I'm a little verklempt right now.
Understandable. It's a dream come true.
But I value this so very much, this moment right now, because this is what I want the other young entertainers, not just actors, not just writers, but people that are looking to get into a field and they're just starting and they're discouraged or they're not sure if they want to keep going at it and everything. This is the reason you keep fighting.
Yep. It's perseverance. It's tenacity. It's doing it, no matter what. You take whatever job you can get. You have to be able to sing, you have to be able to dance, and you have to be able to act. And if you can do all three very well, you will work constantly and consistently in the field. If you are just an actor and you can only act, then you are limiting yourself if you can't sing and dance. And that is where I was able to parlay and do a lot of different things. I was able to do those dance auditions, those crazy Cutler men's clothing industrials where we had to dance in the clothing line, and we did tons of those, and we did tons of, you know, again, different commercials, things like that. The step aerobics, you have to be active to do that. Yeah. And so those things, I was a Roman centurion for some vitamin company, like Centrum, the vitamin.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So
yeah,
I was wearing a toga at one thing. And so I did that. I did a cop for another magazine, and I did AT&T. I did this commercial on billboards where they digitally altered my mouth and made me a sergeant. And they had the words through my mouth. And I think I have that poster at my house still.
Great.
That's awesome. So yeah, it was great. So we opened the show of Camelot, and here I am already booked to start rehearsals for a Broadway show after I finished the show. And that's what was exciting. It very rarely happens like that. And so we started rehearsals, 890 Studios down in the Village, and then we went through, excuse me, that summer. We did 8 weeks of rehearsals. I think I want to say six months of rehearsals. Here is Ken Ludwig, the writer. He is sitting there with Mike Ockrent, the director, who did On Your Toes. He did a bunch of other big shows, and Susan Stroman. This is her first show, and so here we had Jodie Benson. She was the voice of The Little Mermaid. We had Harry Groener, who was on Dear John TV shows. Yeah. He also is the principal for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh,
he did all
oh,
that.
Okay, yeah. Oh,
good. So that's Harry Groener, very well known. He started out in Cats, original show of Cats. He did a couple other shows. And then this was his starring format, and also Jodie's was the two leads. So we had Beth Level, who has won Tonys for The Drowsy Chaperone, and she's done Devil Wears Prada. She's done.
I didn't know she was done.
They opened in Chicago. She's done a slew of things. She did Prom, the musical, and so she's well known. She wasn't at the time, but now she's a well known Broadway star. And she was our Tess. And so we had Bruce Adler. He was our vaudevillian kind of character, the Ziegfeld was the character, but they did it Ziegfeld. I forget now the name of it. But he was well known. We had a couple other guys. Jane Cannell, she was the original Gooch in.
Sounds familiar.
Original Gooch in, Mame. Mame.
Okay.
So Carol Burnett, she had worked with Carol Burnett, and she left later on to do another show with Ken Ludwig, did as well, so we got to go see that one. But to work with these people, to have these people there every day, to change lines, you know, we would do the run-through, and then Ken would come back and say, here, say this, or do this, and Mike said, okay, we need to have you do this, and so it was great to be in that realm of invention or change. Yes, that's what was great. So we opened in Washington, D.C. In the fall, and we were running there for 8 weeks, right before Christmas. And I met four presidents now. I've met tons of celebrities. And it's been a whirlwind tour trip extravaganza as far as my life has gone, because there's so many celebrities, so many different things that have happened. But what was great about Washington, D.C. was we had this great number called by Strauss. It was Waltz by Strauss. Mm. And then we had these gorgeous costumes, hussar costumes that Willie Ivy Long had designed. And he's another Broadway legend for costuming. And he had designed these gorgeous costumes. The women, the guys, we were all wearing these really cool hussar boots with tap boots that had these huge lips on them that went up to our knees. And we were dancing in this. And the number didn't work. So they spent all this money on all these costumes, and the number wasn't working.
Oh, no.
Oof. So they went, you know what? We made a decision. We have to change this out. So we're going to come back tomorrow morning. We're going to learn a new number, and then we're going to put it back in that night. So now you think about it. You've been running this show. You've been doing this number. You have all these different entrances where you usually go to, and now all of a sudden, we had to learn a new number that day and put it in that night. And we did, and it was a big hit. It was the big stiff upper lip number with the where we load up the chairs and they do the flags and the very Les Miserables.
That was the
number that was replaced. Whoa. Yeah.
So goodness.
Yeah. And so we tap danced on the table. We did all these different things, and it was a great, great number. And Susan, I mean, I'm sure she had these other numbers in the back of her mind that she had been working on, but to have her pull it out and have it learned and taught it that day, and then we put it in that night. Was impressive.
Incredibly. By everybody.
That's what you do. Yeah, you're getting paid to do it, and that's where it is. You have to be ready to go at a moment's notice, and you do. And
desperation is the mother of invention, if you ask me.
Always is. Always is.
Especially in theater.
Yep. And so we opened on Broadway on February 19th. We already had talk of Tony Awards before we even came back to New York. There was talk in Washington, D.C. Tommy Toon came out to see us. All these celebrities. Jennifer Holliday from Dreamgirls. Billy Porter, who is a good friend of mine, he had introduced me to Jennifer Holliday. And so just tons of people would come and see us, celebrities from Los Angeles as well as New York celebrities. It was a great time.
It's got a, I know just a little bit of this, but I can't imagine on that level what it's got to feel like to have people that you admire, that you look up to as well, applauding you and coming in to see these shows, coming out of their way to come see these shows
too.
Do we need to take a break? I can't imagine.
Well, before we go into a break, I had one question.
Sure.
So you were there the entire run of the show, all 5 years of the thing. You stayed on the cast for the whole thing. Okay.
Yep. Some people left to do other shows.
Right.
But I think it was two of us, two or three that stayed on to the very end. Yeah.
We hope you're having as good of a time as we are with this. We're really enjoying ourselves. Our next guests were the Lizards, one of the most legendary, if not the most iconic band in Central Wisconsin, I say. Mm-hmm. Huge fan and really, really enjoyed. We got to do something so cool with this one. We got to go on location. We got to go to the studio and meet them on their home field. And not only that, but we got such a great history lesson from some of the most legendary voices in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me... James, of course, has been in the air for a long time, so he's knew him well. It was a new experience for me. I knew at least one of the Lizards from outside, from different areas, but I got to meet them all, and it was really cool to hear not only what they're doing now, their experiences, talking about
Jeff Goss,
what he did for the band, and missing him, and after he had passed and everything. All that was really great. But one of the great parts for me was listening to how the band started. Of course, two original members, Mark and Milo, still around, still kicking with that band. And I thought that was a great moment to catch that, because I don't know if anyone else has ever gotten that down on tape.
No, I don't think so. And it's part of the reason why we asked these guys in, while we asked like Pete Ravel and some of these legends in our area on. We want to document this stuff. We want to make sure that it's there for future generations.
So here is the Lizards.
I'll let Milo correct me where needed. But
That's good. That's a good one. You're out of there,
With this particular band, it was, the name actually originated to Pimp Otis and the Alligators. God bless them. They were playing at a little infamous blues bar in town called McNasty's. And so we figured if Otis and the Alligators was playing and we had an opportunity to play, we would be Lars and the Lizards. Ha ha ha. And 34 years later, it's still with us. We actually actively tried to change our name once upon a time, and it just didn't stick. Was like you couldn't shake it. So and so it started back at a jam session, and we were originally a lot of blues because it was easy to play, and everybody could play it. It was Larry Stanky played harp and vocals, Grant Meyer on bass. Who was drumming, by the way? That's
Ryan Wiegand. And then Kevin Stellman did most of our live gigs.
Oh, that's right.
Because we were without a guitar player for a while.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
It changes
the great guitar player, sound. Kevin Stellman. Kevin's great.
So
yeah, and then we got a guitar player, and Bill, and that changed the sound again.
Bill who?
Bill Redenzel.
Ah,
nice. The infamous.
So I guess it is sort of the name is appropriate, because we've been sort of chameleon like in a way.
Yes.
Because we were doing a lot of Doors, and we were doing a lot of Boston rock and stuff like that, and then Bill Redenzel joined the band, and he brought an Ottawa and of just this whole Grateful Dead catalog. Mm. So we sort of morphed a bit more into sort of a Dead band, a jam band, a little bit more Rolling Stones. The next phase was the show band.
Yeah, with Brenda.
And then the next phase was the band where we decided to be true to ourselves.
Yeah.
And
real quickly, before we go too far forward, with this band doing this, especially you two doing this together, how often do you sit back and say, oh my God, we're still doing this? And enjoying it and having fun in a good way, I mean, necessarily. Or maybe not always in a good way. I mean, you're brothers most and everything, time. Brothers fight. But overall, do you find yourselves doing that from time to time still? That just, geez, we're still doing this, and we're still having fun. We still get to do this.
Yeah.
I for sure do. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy it. And I mean, we don't have roadies, and we're playing this
late in our careers.
Yeah. So
right on.
But I think we've adapted with the times. I mean, going from floor monitors to in-ear monitors to embracing the technology to, this year we're not running our own sound. We're hiring it out and making things a little bit easier as time moves onward.
Let's do this. You guys, when you're first starting, your first recording music, that kind of stuff, where were you? What kind of equipment were you using? And then I want to go right to JB after that with some of the stuff you were just touching on.
It would have been the Aardvark. I bought an 8-track for one of the first digitals.
Yeah.
And did a lot of work with that.
That is pretty cool.
We progressed as, you know, they become outdated.
Yeah. When did you guys move into this studio? I feel like I should know, and I don't
I'm
remember.
Guessing about 10 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a far cry from where you started to where you are right now. This is pretty cool. This is having what you have and working like this. Jamie, some of what you were touching on there.
Actually, I'm going to defer any of those questions to Travis.
That's cool, because I was just about to go to Travis and say about the tablets. Before we got going here in our pregame and everything, we were talking, and Travis was telling me about how we're away from sheets of music now. Everybody's got a tablet, and using that, everything's on there. It doesn't just seem cool, like, to me as a layman. The first thing I think of is a time saver. That seems like it's a pretty quick time saver, is it?
Oh, totally.
Man, even if this is your studio and you're not necessarily the clock is ticking, you got a producer over there telling you, hey, you got to hurry up or whatever, you still have lives. You still have other things you know that pull you away and that kind of stuff. So every second, I imagine, counts.
Yep.
Right on. How did that come about? The tablets, getting everybody on board with that and everything.
I was personally sick of having a wad of papers, you know, about as thick as the Bible.
Taped to your drum.
Yeah, and I would tape them because I'm doing more singing these days, you know, so I don't have the memory capacity to just memorize, you know, a handful of songs at any given time. I'm getting better at it now with the repetition, but I wanted to. I saw Jamie and Mark were kind of the first guys to have tablets in this band, and they had all their stuff right in there, and I'm like, man, I got to get something like that. So I splurged and bought an iPad and then discovered this program where everybody talks together in this program. So everybody's got this program on their tablets. I could put a set list in for next weekend, and everybody would instantly have it on theirs. Every song we play and then some is in there with lyrics and chord charts, and so it's at any given moment we could play pretty much anything and have it at our fingertips.
How many inventions in history started with the simple, I'm frustrated with this, I'm done with it, I'm doing something else? I can't imagine how many damn things were invented just because of frustration. But it's really cool. It's also, you know, you guys have all been doing this. You've done this with multiple people and everything. So for all of you, it's got to be pretty cool to be at this point having things this accessible, putting that much more time and ability into the music. Being able to do that.
I was going to bring that up. I mean, this is kind of a hotly debated topic in sheet music and tablets and things like that. There are people that think that you shouldn't have that on stage. Mm-hmm. And they're right to a certain extent. But then at one point, you know, we had an arsenal of what? You know, 100 songs at our fingertips that we
More
wouldn't
than that,
be playing. Yeah. We wouldn't be playing those every single gig, and somebody at a club will say, hey, play this Stones. Yeah, we can play that Stones song, but gosh.
What key is it?
What key is it in? You know? So it's a matter of keeping the show smoother and making it more about the music and less about, struggling. And the reason why I started getting the tablet on board is, I was filling in with some other bands, and they'll send over a set list two weeks before a show, and it's like, okay, I can plug all of that band's material into my iPad, play a show or two with them, and then 3 months from now, when they call again, I've got 3/4 of their material. I don't have to reinvent the wheel,
right on.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's the technology is...
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you. Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on Locally Grown Radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
Thank you for listening to your local civic media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. 23 tonight, under cloudy skies, northwest winds, around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy again tomorrow, 36. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us for this greatest episode kind of Director's Cut, where we're taking some of our greatest hits and putting them together for you. And boy, of all the guests we had, Seth, we've had great guests, every one of them. Mm-hmm. But as far as kind of a big name that we have kind of get, a big fish, if you will, to us. And honestly, somebody that we just both have, you know, since we were kids, since we were teenagers, mm-hmm. I would say, I've really enjoyed her work, Mary Jo Peel from Mystery Science Theater.
Yes. Not only a star performer, writer on that show. She's done lots of writing since. She's parts of all kinds of great stuff, which
get her book.
Get her book. Yeah. Dumb, dumb, dumb. Mm-hmm. Let's plug that again.
Yeah.
Kind of a memoir of hers with her mm-hmm. mother, which is really cool. But today we wanted to focus a little bit on the process of being an entertainer, doing it for a living,
yeah.
being a writer or being a performer for yeah. a living. And she had some great insight. Plus, she invited us to this really cool sounding thing, right?
Right. We want everybody to know about it. In that answer that she gave us, that did come up. But we did want to highlight that in part because of the answer. And, mm-hmm. and also to remind her that we are coming. We are going to be at her show any day now, any day.
And so without further ado, here is the great Mary Jo Peel.
And then, dumb, 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 I submitted to a small publisher, and the premise is that my mom was an avid reader, and after she died, we found this recipe box full of index cards in which she kept track of all the books she read. Because she read so much, she started forgetting, so she kept her little card catalog.
Wow.
And, yeah, and the little comments, so she makes comments about the plot or how she reacted to it, and there's a scale that she uses, and some of the comments are so hilarious and so pissy, and when we found it, I think we found it a few months after she died, and my father gave it to me, and I just sat with it for a while, and I realized that you start rediscovering your parents. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens to a lot of people when they lose a parent, and all of a sudden, you can't ask them the questions that only occur to you mm-hmm. once they have passed. Mm-hmm. So that's that. Did I get to your question
yes,
at all?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes, okay. Absolutely. When it comes to that, and having a very strong relationship with my mother as well, and I have to mention that being the son of a Jewish mother, I have to fit it into the interview. Did you find yourself things that you admired about her or appreciated about her more or that you had missed before? We get so caught up in life and so close to these things, having some time away from it, coming back to it. Did you find that?
Oh, absolutely. I think you put it very well. Yeah, what I talk about a lot in the book is trying to distance myself from her, which I think might be a natural. I don't have children, so I suspect it's a natural occurrence where a kid is trying to find their own identity. And as I grew older, and then I got married later in life, so I started having life experiences that made me relate to my mother a little bit more. So absolutely, and I started having more we were always pretty tight, but we had our moments, and I found myself just having more and deeper understanding of her as a person, someone much smarter and eloquenter than me, said something like, your parents know you your whole life. You only know them for part of theirs. Wait, did I say that right? Your parents know them. You know you.
Oh, I thought you said it right.
You said it right.
You said it right.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, I think you did. You got it.
Your whole life. You only know them for part of theirs. And I think as I grew older and then once she died, that really, and especially as I read these little book reviews and realized I had forgotten some things and realizing, you know what, she was a three-dimensional human being who had dreams before she had five kids by the time she was 33. So,
Wow. What is next for you? Or are you working on anything now, writing-wise?
You know what I'm working on is, you know, I do riff tracks on a regular basis with my pal and colleague, Bridget Jones Nelson. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a more e-version of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Mm-hmm. So that keeps me very busy. I'm going to redo Dumb 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 because when I was doing the audio version, I realized there were so many, again, typos and dropped letters, that kind of thing, you know, when you're trying to work on stuff and all this stuff comes to bear. The other thing I'm working on is my dad put up a little stage in my one-stall garage. So there's a little backdrop and then a little wooden stage, and I've been having shows in my garage with my comedian and actor friends.
Oh, my gosh.
And...
Oh, that sounds
that is
so
the
awesome!
Cutest reaction ever. Send me your information, and I'll put you on my my emailing list to let you know when the next show
is. I'm sending it right now. Yes.
And anybody else who wants to be on the mailing list, because it's a small audience. It's kind of a speakeasy situation where I only let you know the address until you like let me know you're coming.
Yeah.
So where was I going with this? So what I'm working on is I realized that my having started stand-up comedy was my own version of DIY, trying to figure out that life. Mm-hmm. And my dad building my little stage in my garage, and he can fix anything. And when he was 7 years old, he made Adirondack chairs. Whoa. So I'm trying to make a profile of, and it's also my comedy special that no one asked for, but I'm going to do a comedy special in my garage and figure out a film around comparing it with my dad's sensibilities.
That is
know?
Such a cool idea.
Have I made any sense whatsoever?
Yes.
As you can see, I don't have the cut line yet for that. I don't have the elevator speech yet for what it is. So that's what I'm working on.
But I can hear it forming already, and I love the basis of it and the building literally from him building. Like that's very cool. That's really interesting. When it comes to advice, whether it's about writing or just in general, what's some of the more heartfelt or advice that has really carried you throughout your life here, your creative career especially?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I can suss out specific sentences of advice, maybe more attitudes, where you just have to do your thing. I'm sorry, I'm being very inarticulate as I think about that question. So a friend of mine found out that he's working on a show about an unseen illness, and then he saw that someone else was doing a friend show about their unseen illness, and he kind of texted me like, oh, great. And I felt like, well, everybody's going to have there's always going to be overlapping sensibilities or parallel creativity, if we all just stop doing what we're doing because somebody else is doing it, nothing would ever happen. So, and I remember people encouraging me along the way to that degree. I think the other thing is just really taking whatever you're terrified to try creatively. I think you should run into the belly of the beast and just do it, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
No, what would you guys say? I mean, what have people told you along the way?
Ooh, that's the first time we've been asked
that. Yeah, I like that. Nicely done. Nicely done flipping it. That was good.
No,
that was
really good. I'm really curious.
I would say, kind of piggybacking off of a little bit of what you were saying there, that one of the best things you can do is being you. I teach a little bit of improv, and I have students ask often, you know, how I want to be this or I want to be that. And I you know, try to make sure that they know there's nothing in the universe like you. Like, even if you have a twin, there's nobody else like you. So whatever your approach is going to be different than anybody else's. So even if you're telling a joke, how did the chicken cross the road, you're going to tell it differently than anybody else's. Your voice, your opinion, your take on it's going to be different. So I think that was one of the greater things to happen to me, is realizing, similar to what you were saying, so early on creatively, I wanted to be different than everybody else, and I had to stand out. And I realized pretty early on, no, you kind of just do that already, man. You, for better or worse, you're pretty much your own person. Be you, you know.
Well, yeah, it's like that scene in Life of Brian where the Jesus figure or Brian is telling the whole crowd, "You're all different," and somebody says, "I'm not."
Yes.
But, and if I may quote Miles Davis, it takes you a long time to figure out how to play like yourself. I'm still finding my voice and taking those risks. And I think the thing I'm really avoiding saying is using the Nike phrase, just do it. Have to do it, because I meet a lot of people who say, I want to do stand-up comedy. I just don't know how to do it. Can you give me any advice? And the advice is, that is one of those things that you have to do. Write your ass off. I don't know, can I say that? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
Okay. If you want to write with pals or a writing group, go for it. But it still means you have to get up there. And to your point about improv, one of the best things I ever did, I was so, so shy as a young adult and into my 20s and early 30s. And I started taking improv classes, and that was the best thing I ever did, because it really makes you be in the moment and responsive and really alert to what is happening, not just on stage, but in your life. It's pretty cool. Wouldn't you say, like, don't you think there are skills beyond the stage when one takes improv?
Definitely. Absolutely. I've had attorneys take our classes before, just so that they can feel more comfortable speaking. And at the end of, as they're wrapping up, I'm sorry, Miles Davis is my favorite creative human being of all time. And I got to hear you quote Miles Davis. I may retire after this. I don't know. I'm a little speechless. I gotta be honest.
You're welcome.
Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute? When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Not all people are the same. And yet, when we visit the doctor, our treatments don't look that different. Why is that? Because we just don't have enough information to do it better. By gathering health data from 1 million people, our country's best researchers will be able to develop treatments that are as unique and complex as we are. With this new information, doctors will have a better understanding of disease so they can innovate the next great breakthroughs in medicine. Learn more at joinallofus.org.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripes Cast is just the butter on my cheese.
Mike and Pat, the hosts of the Crash Dummies podcast.
I was born in Nigeria, actually.
Yeah.
So, I was in Nigerian boarding school for like 3 years. It's like a prison sentence. We were trying to prison break our way out of there because they took our passports. So I was trying to have people send me money so I can find a new passport.
Wait. You were in Nigeria trying to have people send you money?
Yeah, trying to escape.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.